There's a basic subject that we haven't really discussed before, which is really can't understand a Torah approach to life without some way of knowing how to handle this issue. So let's see if we can, apart from something that we're due to talk about on Chanukah next week, is the last time that we're due to meet for the next few months, except for that. Let's try and understand this subject, which is very basic, and it is the root of the idea of how a person relates to the spiritual world while they're in the physical world. In other words, there's a classic subject that's known as Hishtadlus and Bitachon. That's usually the way it's referred to, meaning there's an obligation to make an effort. That means you live in a physical world, environment, let's say the real world, let's say, physical terms, and you have to make an effort. You can't sit immobile expecting things to happen for you. You have to make an effort. On the other hand, you're supposed to conduct yourself in such a way that you understand that Hashem is doing everything that's being done. And the two, of course, are a contradiction to each other. When you make an effort, when a person makes an effort in the world, so then you have what looks like the result of his effort. That means if you go out to make a living. So because you spend time trying to make a living, and then you make a living, of course the natural tendency is to say that you earned this money because you put the work in. And not to say that Hashem gave you this money and would have given it to you otherwise. Would have given it to you anyway. On the other hand, would he really have given it to you anyway if you would have stayed home? How does that work exactly? We understand that on Rosh Hashanah, how much you're going to earn in the coming year is actually predestined in some sense. On the other hand, we are required to go out and make an effort. So there's a paradox here, there's a conflict between how much effort you have to make, and yet you also have to be aware all the time that the effort's actually irrelevant. It means you have to be sort of schizophrenic. You have to know that you're making an effort. At the same time, no matter how much effort you make, you have to be aware that your effort actually is irrelevant. That it's the consequences are happening in the spiritual world regardless of your effort. Now, how exactly do you approach this paradox? At which level, how does a person conduct himself, especially, let's say, if you're starting out in spiritual, person is starting out in spiritual growth? How do you handle this issue? Do you have to do more in the physical world? Do you have to do less? How do you find the balance, exactly what it is you're supposed to do in the physical world? How do you appreciate, if you're busy doing physical activity, how do you appreciate the spiritual source of things? Now, if you do make an effort in the physical world, even a token effort, but then you find that it's possible to say that the result happened because you made an effort. So that clouds your eyes from seeing that the result actually happens from the spiritual world. On the other hand, if you don't make an effort, then you're not allowed to see the results. Hashem doesn't give you the consequences, doesn't give you what you need if you don't make any effort at all. So it seems that you're caught either way. This is the classic problem, the classic paradox that's called Hishtadlus and Bitachon. Hishtadlus means the effort that you have to make, the work you have to put in, not the token effort or the effort, physical effort you have to put in the physical world. Bitachon means the, in English it's called, let's say faith, or emunah is really faith. Bitachon means trust in Hashem, let's say. They're usually translated as trust. Trust in Hashem, that's not a good translation. But it means knowing that everything comes from the spiritual dimension, from Hashem. And the tension between these two is a classic Torah subject that is not easy to understand. At a simple level, a person can train himself to do certain things. The example that comes to mind is the Rambam composed a small prayer, small tefillah, that a person should say before he... Rambam was a doctor. So before taking any medication, or for that matter, for a doctor, when a doctor gives any medication, then he composed a little tefillah that a person should say. It's very interesting. What are the words? The words are, Yehi Ratzon Milfonecho, may it be your will, Hashem, Sheyeh Esek Ze Li Refuah, may this thing, Esek means whatever the thing is, this tablet or this injection or whatever it is, may this medicine, let's say, be a healing for me. What do you achieve by doing this? You achieve the following thing. You're first of all taking the medicine. The Rambam doesn't say over there that you should avoid medicines and just sit and meditate or daven. He doesn't say that. You take the medicine. But because of the danger of taking the medication and thinking that maybe the medicine helped you, and losing sight of the spiritual world, which is the worst thing you could do, so what you do is you make the effort, which you're obliged to, but in order not to hide from yourself the spiritual source, so you reinforce the message. You say to yourself, Hashem, I know it's you who are doing this effect that's going to be brought about now, and I'm only taking the medicine as a token effort because you require it. May it be your will that the medicine will do what it's supposed to do, but may it be your will, no? You're not saying to Hashem that the medicine should work and he should stay out of the picture, chas v'shalom. What you're saying is, may it be your will. In other words, the only things that happen in the world actually are your will. And therefore, what you do is, you ask that his rotzin, his will, no, divine energy, should be put into this activity that you're doing, and that's actually what should make it work. In other words, you're trying to deal with the problem of having to make a physical effort and not forget, not become drawn into the physical world and think that it's real. Can't ignore it, and you can't let it override. They say very sharply that a doctor has to function extremely in extreme fashion in this regard. Actually, everybody does, but the example is very clear in medicine, is that when a doctor treats his patient, the way he has to treat the patient is, he has to, before he starts treating the patient, he has to say to himself that what's going to happen to this patient has got nothing to do with me. In other words, whether this patient lives or dies, it's got nothing to do with my effort. It's all up to Hashem. He's got his own cheshbon in Shemaim. What's going to happen to him has got nothing to do with me. If Hashem has destined or wants this patient to live, then no matter what I do, no matter how great my skill, if Hashem wants him to live, no matter how much I try the opposite, I'm not going to harm him, and vice versa. If he's not able to make it, then no matter how great my skill, I won't be able to help him. And after he's reinforced that idea and he's got it clear to himself, he then has to start treating the patient as if the patient's every breath depends on him. In other words, he has to make an effort as if it depends on him. But with every effort that he makes that takes full responsibility, you're not allowed to be slipshod and say, well, it doesn't make any difference. Actually, it's only a token effort anyway. So why bother to do it properly? You're not allowed to do that. You have to make the effort in a responsible fashion, but never be drawn into the trap of thinking that your effort actually is achieving the result, which is a very, very difficult thing to do. That's a schizophrenic sort of exercise that a person has to train himself to do. And actually, a person who earns a living has to do the same thing, also has to tell himself or herself that the effort is actually only what's required technically, but is not actually achieving the result. But there's a deeper way that this problem can be understood, which is based on this idea. Let's see if we can try and work through it and understand. Rabbi Miller from Gateshead expresses it something like this. Talmud of the great Rabbi Dessler puts across the idea in the following form. He basically divides people into five different levels. And if you remember, we once discussed here, two years ago, we discussed the four different levels, or the different levels on which people can be in terms of their connection to the spiritual world. That means how a person sees nature and how a person sees miracle. What's called nais. Nais and teva. How do you see the spiritual world? How do you look at the miraculous? And how do you look at the natural? Do you see the distinction between the two? Do you see nature as miracle? There are four levels on which people can be. We won't have time now to work through all those levels and tonight's idea, but the two have to be seen together. If you're interested in the subject, particularly, then you can... I think there's a cassette that was made of that discussion. I think it's called Nature and Miracles, if I'm not mistaken. Or it's called The Four Levels of Nature. I forget exactly the name, but it goes through the levels on which people can be in terms of how well they see the spiritual world. Now, and that will give background that will fill out this evening's discussion. We'll have occasion to refer to some of those levels. You can look at people in terms of being on different spiritual levels. And you will understand from this distinction, this way of dividing people's spiritual level, let's say spiritual greatness, you can understand from this exactly why it is that some people have to do a lot of effort in the physical world. Some people do not have to do a lot of effort. Some people may not do a lot of effort. Some people have to do a lot of effort and fail. Other people have to do a lot of effort and succeed. And Hashem deals with each person, not according to his need. In other words, what we hope to achieve from this discussion is a beginning of an understanding of the very confusing idea of why it may be that I may put a lot of effort into something and fail completely. And somebody else may put effort in and succeed. And somebody else may put very little effort in and succeed very greatly. Why does Hashem do that? That's a very important subject. And from an understanding of this subject, a person can learn how much effort it is that they are supposed to be making. Because it would be very tragic to spend your life making an effort in the physical world when actually it's not required from you. A person goes to work every day. Actually, at the beginning of the year, it's been defined how much you'll earn this year. And if you make a tiny amount of effort, 1 hour a month, all you have to do is buy a lottery ticket. There were great tzaddikim of the last generation who used to do that. It's an effort. Somebody wins. That's an effort. That's at least earn a living. I don't know if any of them ever won. But They understood that Hashem requires an effort. They wanted to sit and learn Torah all day. So why not sit and learn all day? Are you required to make a token effort? Go out, spend 10 minutes, buy a lottery ticket, you made your effort. Making an effort to earn a living is a tax that you have to pay. Adam was created, Adam Rishon was created without having to make an effort. He was created in a garden, an amazing, spiritual, mystical place. He didn't have to make any effort. Because of the sin, he was cursed with the obligation and the requirement to make some kind of effort. It was like a tax was imposed on his life. But as all the commentaries say, when you're given a tax, you don't try to pay more. When you're taxed, you try to get away with the least that you have to. And therefore, when a person is taxed and has to make an effort in making a living, get away with the least. Sit and learn Torah all day. Put yourself into situations where you'll grow spiritually. Not spend your time working on yourself, learning Torah, learning Musa, doing mitzvahs. And tokenism. So an hour a week, an hour a day, an hour a week, an hour a month, whatever it is. It would be nice to be able to do that, right? No? Why not? No? And according to Torah philosophy, that's what one has to do. One has to come close as possible to the line. What's the minimum amount of effort? Or what's, let's say, the maximum effort that I'm allowed to make, or the minimum that I must make, in order to deserve, in order to earn what it is that I hope to earn here. Now, there are many principles that apply to this very complex question, but one of them, just one dimension of this issue, which gives tremendous clarity at many different levels of reality, is what he puts across as follows. Again, I'm not claiming that it explains the whole overall picture. You need many other angles also that fill it in, and of course each person has to assess it in his own individual, personal, private situation in terms of exactly what he or she needs now. But the overall guidelines, a wonderful approach to the subject, beginning approach to the subject, is something like this. First of all, you see people, there are people, we don't see them today, but you have at the highest level of reality, people who are so spiritually accomplished. People have reached such a high level of spiritual awareness, of self-development, of consciousness of Hashem, let's say, that people in this level make no distinction between nature and miracle. And that's what has to be understood first and foremost. Again, it's not relevant to most of us. If you think it's relevant to you, if you think you're on a level where miracles, yeah, where you can perform miracles, as these people can on this level, then you don't belong here in this conversation. But if you feel you're a bit below that, maybe, just a little bit below that level, then you might gain something from this discussion. So let's understand. You have people on a level, or we certainly have in Jewish history, people who are on a level where they can perform miracles, let's say. Right? They merit seeing the miraculous. They merit seeing the supernatural transcendent phenomena happen. Why? Why? Let's understand. The question we wish to get to, let's make it clear, the question we wish to get to is, why do they have to make any effort in the physical world? If you're on such a level that the miraculous happens for you, you need something and it happens, so why do you have to make an effort to achieve that which you need? If you're able to call on a miracle anytime you want, and we have many, many examples in Torah and in Jewish history, so why do you have to make an effort? That's the question. But let's approach it like this. First of all, you have people on that level. Examples would be, the Gemara says, I think it's the Gemara in Tainis, it says, one Friday afternoon, Rav Chanina ben Doisa wanted to light Shabbos lights, and there was no olive oil. You know, they used to light, as some people still do, light with wicks in olive oil. And there was no oil. So all there was some vinegar. So he said, it's no problem, bring the vinegar. So they brought the vinegar and he lit the vinegar. So people obviously were standing around, must have said, oh, but you can't do that, vinegar doesn't burn. So he said, no, of course it does. Misha omer l'shemen v'yidlok, yomer l'chemetz v'yidlok. Let he who said to the oil that it should burn, let him say to vinegar that it should burn. What did he mean? He meant this. You think that oil burns because it's a combustible. If you ask somebody in the modern age why oil burns, somebody who knows about it, give a wonderful explanation. It's a combustible mixture of hydrocarbons, you know, and he'll explain to you exactly why it burns. Why vinegar doesn't burn? It's impossible for vinegar to burn. It's not a combustible substance. But actually, that's completely wrong. That's completely wrong. Oil burns because Hashem wants it to burn. Obviously. Only the way you try to provide it with some sort of logical explanation is you describe it in that way. But obviously everything in the world is only Hashem's existence. There is nothing that's real besides that. And therefore the fact that oil burns at the highest level of understanding really is only because Hashem is revealing right now his desire that oil should burn. Vinegar doesn't burn because Hashem simply reveals his desire that vinegar doesn't burn, but it's all. But if you're on a level where it makes no difference to you, where you understand that oil is just an illusion anyway, that the reality over here is what Hashem intends, what Hashem wants, So then it doesn't make any difference to you whether oil does or doesn't burn, whether vinegar does or doesn't burn. All that you are in tune with is Hashem's desire. And in terms of Hashem's desire, obviously vinegar can burn just as easily as oil can. Therefore, if you're on a level where it makes no difference to you, so it makes no difference to Hashem either. Don't understand why. This is a slightly an aside, but first of all, just to get this clear, why is it that if a person realizes this so intensely, but of course you have to realize it so intensely that you're not impressed at all. That means when you light vinegar and it burns, you're not impressed at all. You're just every bit as impressed when oil burns. You think that you're seeing an amazing revelation of Hashem's will here. When oil burns, it's just as much a miracle to you as when vinegar burns. Every bit as much. If you have any reaction to vinegar burning at all, of course you're nowhere near this level. Now, why is it that someone on this level can do these kind of miracles? And by the way, the Gemara is full of them. In fact, there's a remarkable question in the mystical writings that deals with why the Talmudic period in Jewish history is much more full of miracles than even the Tanakh period, which was a much greater level of spiritual greatness. But even the Talmudic period is full of Tanoim doing miracles. Rav Chanina ben Dosa lighting the vinegar, and I think it was Rav Chanina also put his foot over the hole of a poisonous, sort of a cobra, a very poisonous animal. And to show his students that animals don't kill, sin kills. Right? Put his foot over there to show that it had no effect on him. And in fact, I think if I'm not mistaken, the Gemara says that if it bites a man, it depends who dies first, if whichever one gets to water first. And I think, anyway, the long and the short of it is it bit him and died. Okay? It bit him and it died. You follow? This cobra bit him and the cobra died. That's what happened. He wanted to show his students that it's not the physical world that does harm, it's your sin that does harm. And there are many examples. There are examples in the Gemara of people who revived the dead. Plenty of examples in Gemara times. We're talking just under 2,000 years ago. That means in the beginning, in the common era, in the history period that you read about a few centuries ago. There were people, the Gemara says quite clearly, examples, one of the beginners, the lower level students, Talmidim, in Rabbi Huda Anasi's Beis Medrash. The Gemara says quite clearly that he was able to revive the dead. The example the Gemara gives, and the Gemara doesn't even tell it as a miracle. It just mentions it, by the way, because it's significant with regard to something else. It says that on one occasion, that Antoninus, the Roman Emperor Marcus Aurelius, he used to go and visit Rebbe. He used to visit him in a secret fashion and want people to know. And because he didn't want people to know that he was visiting him and learning from him, he used to take two slaves with him, the Gemara says, when he arrived at the entrance to the secret tunnel that led into Rebbe's inner sort of place. He used to kill the one slave. And on his way back, when he reached his palace, he used to kill the other one. Slaves were expendable in Rome. He used to take them for an escort and kill them. What happened on one occasion was he killed a slave, and he went inside to speak to Rebbe, and he wasn't alone. Rebbe was there with one of his young students, one of the least of the students, or at least one of the students, one of the Talmidim in his Beis Medrash. And when Marcus Aurelius, great Roman Emperor Antoninus, when he saw this man, he said to Rebbe, I told you I never want to be seen with anybody else. I want to be private and secret. So Rebbe tried to put him off as a lay stand bar inish, he isn't human, don't worry about him. But eventually, he couldn't put him off. So finally, the Roman, he said to the Talmud, don't call my slave in. He thought that would take him quite some time. He'd find a corpse outside, and he'd have to, you know, figure out how he's going to ask this corpse to step inside. So it says that the Talmud went outside, and in the passage he found the dead slave. So he had a dilemma, the Gemara says, because to schlep a corpse in is not a covet for a king. You follow? It's not an honor for a king, and you have to show respect to a king, even a non-Jewish king. On the other hand, not to obey the king is also not an honor. What was he going to do? So it says there wasn't much trouble. Bayu Rachmev Achye. He davened, brought him back to life, and brought him in. So it says that when Antonina saw it, he said to Rebbe that I'm not impressed at all, the Gemara says. I know that even the least in your school can do that. And there's many examples like that. The Gemara has cases of Marukva and his wife standing in a fire. You know, not to embarrass somebody, they went and hid in an oven. And many, many cases of miracles that happen. At the beck and call, as it were, of people who are on a great spiritual level. Now the reason, the way to understand this is as follows. The reason that a person can do a miracle and call on the miracle, demand that it happen, he can bring vinegar and light it, that doesn't mean Hashem is granting him a miracle. That means he's actually causing it to happen. The reason for that, and we discussed this on that occasion, just very briefly, the reason is this, that the whole of nature really is only a mask. That's what we understand. We understand that nature actually is a mask of Hashem. If it weren't for nature, you'd see Hashem directly. So what happens is he builds a world where there's a routine that happens all the time, and you get so used to it, you think that it's what you call natural. You don't realize that it's actually Hashem doing it all the time. Actually, there's no reason that a natural phenomenon is any less miraculous than an unnatural, just that you're used to the one, that's all. The other one you haven't seen yet. So you think it would be remarkable and amazing thing if it happened, but it's only because you haven't seen it. But the things you are used to seeing are every bit as wonderful, just that you're so accustomed to them that they don't move you anymore. But that's what Hashem does. In order to prevent your seeing the spiritual world so that you still operate within the realm of free choice, He hides the spiritual world with a world called nature. He makes it look so-called natural. Teva, the word teva in Hebrew, which means nature, really means to drown. Tova in Hebrew means to drown. It means you drown in an illusion of unreality. That's what it means. It has other meanings also. Therefore, nature is just a mask. Now, if a person's on a great enough level, what happens is, it's a fantastic thing to understand, a mask is only relevant to somebody you can't see through the mask. Think about it for a minute. Let's say you're sitting someplace and a friend of yours comes in a disguise. Yes? Wants to fool you, he can't see who this person is. So this person is teasing you and he's talking in a strange voice and he's wearing a disguise and you can't see who the person is. And he taunts you, right, because you can't identify the person. Let's say after a while you recognize who the person is. Is there any point to his wearing a disguise anymore? Obviously not. What fool would wear a disguise, hiding himself in front of somebody who knows who he is? Obviously, the only point in a mask is so that somebody can't see it. But if the person sees through the mask, no point. And that's exactly the way Hashem is. He puts a mask on for people who can't see through the mask. But for people who can see through the mask, he takes the mask off. What's the point of hiding himself in nature? You hear the beauty of it. What's the point of hiding himself behind nature in front of a man who sees through nature? If Chanina ben Doisa doesn't have it, he's not impressed at all by nature. It doesn't make any difference to him. To him, there's nothing natural about the world. To him, it makes absolutely no difference whether oil burns or vinegar burns. Not at all. So why should Hashem bother, you follow? Why does Hashem bother to continue making oil burn and not vinegar? The only reason He makes oil burn and not vinegar burn for you is so that you can end up thinking that there's some sort of natural law over here that's got its own reality. So you don't see Hashem. But if you see Hashem clearly, are we together? No. If you see Hashem clearly, then of course there's no need for him to hide himself anymore. He takes off the mask. And if you're on that level, so then you can call on miracles. Because you don't need, you're not, there's nothing that's hidden from you anyway. And so if you use the world for the right purpose, you can use it for the right purpose as you see fit. Okay, that's the idea. That's the idea. That's the basic idea of how a person on that level is able to merit. Now the question that we have to ask, that's a very interesting discussion in its own right. But the question we have to ask is this. So why does he have to make any effort? You see, people on that level of greatness, you find that they also make natural effort in the world. They do make an effort in the world. They do things that seem natural. At least somewhat, somehow natural. That's the problem. If a man like that can take vinegar and make it burn when he wants to, so why does he ever have to make any effort to make a living or whatever it is that he does? And you find that they do. You find they do. Many, many examples. It says Yaakov Avinu, for example. We're talking about people on incredible level of spiritual greatness. Jacob. Yaakov Avinu. When he went to sleep, he put some stones around his head. So Rashi says, was to keep off the wild animals. He made like a gutter of stones, so the semicircle of, now no wild animal. You know, if you what about his feet? You follow? So this wild mountain lion is about to devour him, so you're going to walk around the stones. Yes? What effect is it going to have? So why did he see fit to make some effort? Such a strange token effort? And they ask this question in many places when Noah built the ark, built the teva. What was the purpose of an ark? Can I fit millions and millions of species of animals in a little ark? So obviously miraculous. Why do you have to make an effort? Many, many questions of this nature. Let's try and state the principle and then we'll try and see the applications. Again, the question is this. Somebody on a level, who is on a level, where the miraculous is manifest to him all the time, and he can call on the miraculous at any level, and Hashem tells him that he's going to do miracles for him, and even announces to him what the miracle is going to be, why is it that he has to make any effort? Now the answer is, and there's perhaps more than one answer, or more angles, but one, but just we can just take one dimension of it, is that in humbleness, in humility, he makes a token effort that he shouldn't feel, it's a remarkable idea, that he shouldn't feel the pride of a miracle happening for him. He's aware that Hashem conducts the world in a natural way. To him it makes no difference. But he's aware that Hashem wants it that way. He's not blind. He sees that oil usually burns and vinegar usually doesn't. He's not a fool. He knows the way the rules work. Only he knows he's beyond the rules. But he knows the rules work that way. So when a miracle happens for him, he realizes something unique is being done for him. He realizes that people are meriting here to see something very unusual. And in order not to have the pride of thinking that he deserves this, even though he does deserve it. He avoids those things, and when he has to do those things, he makes an effort in such a way that in a small way you could say that actually it happened because of that effort. Just enough to minimize the miracle, what the Ramban calls lemayat esanes. The Ramban says that it's just to minimize the miracle, just to shield him from the pride of being completely exposed to his own greatness. That's all. He puts some stones around his head, Yaakov, just that, after all, maybe the stones do something, maybe it's a sort of a barrier, maybe the animal will see it and walk away. It's extreme, but it is enough of an effort that if you really wish to, you could say, well, this is what achieved the effect. You see, there are many examples. One classic example, you see, this isn't even for other people, it's only privately, even if he's alone he does it. The example they bring was when Elisha had to revive the child. Remember, there was a child who died. The woman, he was able to arrange it in such a way that she would have a child. He prayed for her, and she had a child. When the boy was some years old, he died. Remember the story. And he was able to revive the child. How did he do it? It says that he went in and closed the door, and he davened to Hashem to revive the child. But also, he lay on him, and he put his mouth on his mouth, and his eyes on his eyes, and he lay on him in sort of an effort of resuscitation, to sort of breathe into him. But actually, of course, the boy was revived. He'd been dead for many hours. He only revived because he davened to Hashem. But he himself didn't want to do a thing that was so openly miraculous that it wouldn't have any physical component at all. Even though there was no one to see it, it says clearly that he closed the door, if you read in the Psukim. That means even in front of himself, just alone, he and Hashem only, he still wished to do something that will have some sort of natural component to it, so that he shouldn't have to face his own greatness. That was his humility. You see it in many, many examples. It says that when Noah built the table, so the Ramban says clearly what a miracle it was. He built the table. You know how big the table was? The table was 300 amas long by 50 by 30. 300 amas is about 120, 130, 140 meters. By 50 by 30, that's about 25 meters, 20 odd meters by 30 meters, and about 30 amas, that's about 15 meters. And not only that, but it tapered towards the top to one amma, which is about half a meter. This is an amma from here to here. So it was pointed like this towards the bottom. The bottom section, which was the biggest, right, because it tapered this way. Are you with me? The bottom section, which was the biggest, was completely empty. It was only for waste. There were no animals there. It says clearly that it was only for waste products, waste material. What was on the middle floor was all the animals, and on the top was Noach. He himself. Huh? They all fitted into that space. Noach and the rabbits and everybody else who was with him. They all had to fit into that space. And on the middle section, which was not the biggest by any means, which animals fitted there? All species of animals on earth, including the enormous ones. Huh? In millions upon millions, I think that there's over 2 million species of mammal, if I'm not mistaken, that have been described. Millions of species, 5 million species of insects, I think. Millions upon millions of reptiles, enormous reptiles. Elephants, right? And some of them, there were seven of the kosher animals, there were seven of each. And the unkosher animals, there were two of each. But it was completely miraculous that they could fit. I mean, as if that wasn't a miracle, the fact that they all lived together peacefully. The only time anyone ever injured anyone was a lion once bit Noach, it says, because he was late feeding him. But apart from that, they lived, you know, it was one miracle, it was one enormous miracle. So then they asked the question, if it was a miracle, why do you have to build a table in the first place? You follow? And why make it that size? You could have built it the tile. You could have built it as big as a table. Why did you have to build? So the Ramban says, Lemayat Esanes, just to make the miracle look a little bit less miraculous. That's all. Just to hide the miracle enough that it shouldn't look to him that he had been treated miraculously. But it's a token effort, that's all. And you see many, many examples. It says, sometimes Hashem even tells a man to do that it should look that way. It says Hashem told Moshe Rabbeinu to go up on Har Nevo. You remember when Moshe wasn't allowed to see the land of Israel? He wasn't allowed to go in. So Hashem told him, go up on the mountain and I will show you the whole land. You can't see the whole land of Israel from Har Nevo. There's no mountain high enough to see the whole land of Israel. You can't see the whole country. It's miraculous that he showed. It says he rolled the country in front of him. He showed him the whole country miraculously. So why go on the mountain then? If you're going to show me a miraculous presentation of the whole land, no matter where you stand. But again, he told him to go on a mountain because a mountain is a place where you see more. So to make the miracle a little bit more natural, are we together? So he made him go. And there's many, many, many examples of people who either chose themselves or Hashem commanded them to do things that had a natural component. It says Rav Shimon Bar Yochai was in a cave with his son for 13 years. They lived in a cave for 12 years and then one more year after that. 13 years they were in a cave hiding from the Romans, and they learned Torah, the two great men, the man who wrote the Zohar, author of the Zohar, and his son. For 13 years they didn't even wear clothes, they were buried in the sand. They were buried up to the neck in sand all the time, and they only wore their clothes when they had a daven. And how did they get fed? So it says, miraculously a kruv, a carob tree, grew outside in a stream of water, and they said they're fed miraculously. Why they need water in the first place? Why they need a little food in the first place? Again, same idea, just in order that there should be a small natural component to minimize the miracle. Okay, so what do we have? We have here somebody who's on the first level, the level of intense greatness like that, where a person like that needs no physical effort at all. Everything's miraculous to him, and he can call on the miracle at will. He doesn't need anything physical. So the question at his level is, why does he do anything physical? And it's a wonderful answer, because many times you think this person is zoicha to such incredible miracles. Why is it that they need to make any effort? Why does he live miraculously all the time? This is a very good explanation. There are also other explanations which a person shouldn't forget. For example, it says that by the Navi, when he dealt with a woman, you remember the story, she was so poor she had nothing, only one small flask of oil left in the house. You remember? And the debtors, the people who were going to come and take away the creditors, the people who were going to come and take away her sons to work for them, they were already coming. There was no way that she could support herself anymore. So the Navi said to her, what do you have in the house? So she said, one small flask of oil. So he said, bring the oil and borrow vessels from your neighbors. You remember the story? And she borrowed empty vessels from the neighbors, and he started pouring the oil into one vessel and the next and the next and the next, and it kept flowing. One jar kept filling and filling and filling and filling until finally there were no more vessels. And he said, fill and take away the full vessels. Until finally, it says, Ein od keli, there was no more vessel, and the oil stopped. And then the Mefarshim said, explains to you that you only get brocha in terms of how empty you make your vessel. The other things that are taught there, again, the same message that there was a natural component, that the blessing started from a place. If he was going to do a miracle, he could make oil already. They have to start with something that there was. The same idea, always, that there's that little bit of physicality. And then the other messages also, to teach you that you have to prepare your vessels, that the brocha, even miraculous, will only fill the vessels that you provide. That you can't expect, even at a miraculous level, that Hashem will only fill for you. The miracle he'll only do for you. He'll only conduct your life on a transcendent plane as much as you open yourself to it. Another wonderful message that we get from that. And there are other dimensions as well. But the basic idea should be clear. Let's look now briefly at the next level. If you think you're on that level, as I said, then you don't need the rest of this discussion. In fact, you can just float up. But it says clearly that most people are on a level which unfortunately is not the one we're about to deal with. It's still a way down. We'll get there. Most people. The next level is like this. This is a person who is on a level where it could be that he could witness miracles. It could be so. But he cannot claim to be on a level where it makes no difference. This is a person who's on a level where a miracle may happen for him, where he does merit to see the transcendent supernatural world, but it impresses him more than the natural. He cannot honestly claim that when he witnesses something that's transcendent, he cannot claim that he has no feeling at all, that it's absolutely one and the same to him. Okay? That is somebody, in other words, who has been trapped, to some extent, or at least potentially trapped, in the world of nature, that nature seems somehow to be real. Now, that's not most of us. That means somebody who's still on a level where the miraculous is possible and maybe even commonplace. And a person who so sees through nature that it hardly makes any difference, but it may make some difference somewhere. This person, the question is, if he's on such a level of greatness, the same question applies. Why does this person have to make effort in the physical world? And the answer is as follows. Remarkable idea. Actually, although we aren't on this level, but many times this idea does apply to us. A person who's on this level has to make an effort in the physical world in order to show himself that the effort doesn't mean anything. And a person on this level has to make as much effort as possible. Because what he's trying to do is break his belief in the effort. You see, the problem is that Chazal say that the natural tendency of a person is to say, Koichi ve'etzim yodi, osso li esachai lazeh. That the power and might of my hand has wrought for me this greatness, this result. A person tends to think, as we said in the beginning, that it's what you do that achieves the result. How do you break that? You do and you break. You see, if you want to prove to yourself that it's not your effort that is producing the result, what must you do? You must make an effort, and as you make the effort, break the effort. You must make the effort and show yourself that it's not this effort. Are we together? Don't blame me. Again, the only way to get this clear, I think the best way to handle this, is we have to look at the next level down as well, okay? Let's look at these two levels together. It makes it much clearer. Let's hold that for a minute. Put it on hold. We'll come back. The next level down, let's call it the third level down. The third level is a person who is on a level where he sees through nature, but he is in danger of not seeing through it. This person, he's got such a real danger that if he makes an effort in the physical world, he may get trapped involuntarily into thinking that his effort actually achieved the result. And there's only one way such a person can conduct himself. What's that? He must make no effort at all. He must minimize the effort that he makes. Because any time, you follow, this is an individual who has to call on the miraculous. He has to call on the miraculous. Because if he doesn't call on the miraculous, if he calls on the natural, he'll think that the natural is real. You follow? He's caught in a situation where he forces Hashem to do miracles for him. Because if he would conduct himself in a natural way, let's say he'll go out and make a living. And he'll then think that the effort that he put in yielded the result. So he'll lose all his emunah. He'll think that there's no divine level of action in the world. And he'll think that what he does causes the result. Are we together? And therefore, this individual can't afford to get involved in the physical world. He has to minimize his effort in the physical world, even though it calls on the miraculous more, in order not to be trapped, yes, into thinking that, let's compare these two levels, and that should become clear. I'll give you a practical illustration which makes it very clear. But first, the idea. Again, the idea is this. The person on the higher level can afford to make a lot of effort in the physical world. Why? To show himself that the effort's nothing. And to continue to teach himself this message, he does the physical effort. And while he's doing it, he says, like we said, a person who takes a medicine. And as he's taking it, he says to himself, Hashem, I see right through this. This is doing nothing. But he takes it to teach himself that nature is nothing. You follow? If this individual didn't make the effort, then he would also be in danger of thinking that the effort does something. You follow? The way he teaches himself that the effort has no effect, that it's all Hashem, is he takes the effort, and while he's making the effort, he makes an effort to break it. But the individual on the next level can't afford that. Because his danger, his worry is, that if he makes an effort in the physical, he'll be trapped into thinking, he can't get out of the trap of thinking, he's not able to break it. The more effort he makes, every time he takes a step or he moves his hand, and he thinks that he did it, and he really ends up feeling that, he's lost his emunah. So this individual, paradoxically, must do less than the individual on the island. Is anyone with me? I'll give an example that should make it clear. There's an incredible chazal that puts it like this. Incredible idea. It says this. There were four kings. It's amazing. It compares them. And you'll see it's simply a scale of values. There are many examples. There's a simple example that everybody should know. The Gemara in Brochus talks about Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai. These two great men who taught each one a different one. Rishmol taught, Shimon bar Yochai taught that a person shouldn't make any effort. He should only learn Torah, because he said if you make an effort, by the time you plow, and then you sow, and then you tend the fields, and who's going to have time for learning? Therefore, all you have to do is learn, and Hashem will take care of it miraculously. And Rishmol says you can't do that, you must make an effort. At the time of plowing, you must plow. At the time of planting, you must plant. They explain, and Nefesh HaChaim explains, there's no argument at all. Simply talking about how much effort you have to make to achieve the result. If you're at the higher level, if you're at a certain level, you can afford to do very little effort if you're on a certain level, and Hashem will give you the result. But if you're on a slightly lower level, you must do the effort and break the effort. Let me give you a practical example that perhaps makes it even clearer. There were four kings, Hazal say, who handled themselves in different ways. Very remarkable. It says there was David, Asa, Yehoshaphat, and Chizkiah. These were the four kings. What did they do? King David, David HaMelech, it says that he said to Hashem, I'll do everything. That's what he said. It says, Erdoif Oivai Vashmidaim, I think it says, Valei Oshivat Kaloisam. I will chase my enemies, and I will smash them, and I won't return until I've wiped them out. Enemies who threatened the Jewish people. David had to lead the Jewish people in wars against these enemies. And he said to Hashem, I will destroy these enemies. I will do it. That's what he said. I will chase them and I will destroy them. And the Midrash says, I think it's the Yalkut, it says that Hashem said, ani oisechet, I will do it. David says, I will do this, I will chase them, I will destroy them. And Hashem answers by saying, I'll do it. Strange to understand. The next level, let's learn the whole Ma'am Chazal, then we'll try and understand it. The next level was a king called Asa, King Asa. It says that what he did was, he said to Hashem, I will chase my enemies, but it doesn't say I'll destroy them. I'll chase them. Ein bikoyach, I don't have the power, Ella Ludov, I don't have the power to chase them and destroy them like David. I have the power only to chase them. And what does it say in Tanakh? That he chased them and Hashem destroyed them. He chased his enemies and when he got there he found them dead. He chased them, he made the effort, but he didn't make the effort to destroy them, Hashem did that. In other words, David HaMelech did everything naturally. He chased his enemies and destroyed them without any miracles. King Asa chased them, but the destruction was miraculous. What's the next level down? Jehoshaphat. I translate that in English. Jehoshaphat. If you don't mind. Jehoshaphat. What does it say about him? He said, Ein bikeach ela lahagid shira. I don't have power except to say praise. I don't have power. I don't have the power to do what these great men did. David, to chase and destroy. King Asa, to chase enemies. I only have power to go to the base of Mikdash and daven. And they davened, they prayed. And what happened? While they were praying, it says Hashem set up ambushes. Miraculously, there were ambushes, and the enemies were caught in them, and they were destroyed. They didn't even bother to chase them. Never mind, they didn't bother to fight them. They made no effort at all. They went and davened. And by the way, in all of them, it says, Hashem says, Ani oisechet. I will do it, I will do it, I will do it. The fourth level is King Chizkiah. Chizkiah was the king, as you probably remember. He lived at that incredible generation where he stimulated the Jewish people to such a level of Torah learning that it says there wasn't a child, there wasn't a baby, it says. Tinoikus, not a baby. From Dan v'ad Beersheba, from Dan to Beersheba, there wasn't a baby that didn't know all the laws of Tumah and Taira, those complicated areas of Torah. The Jewish people were on such a level of Torah greatness that every little child, you could stop a child in the street and ask the most complicated shaila, the little children knew it. Incredible level of spiritual greatness. The effort they made was Torah learning. But what does it say about him? When the Assyrians attacked him, you remember the famous, even in secular writing and poetry, you have this, the Assyrians, Sennacherib attacked Jerusalem and he besieged it, he surrounded it, there were hundreds of thousands of the enemy and he had to defend. He was a Jewish king, he had to take the Jewish army, he had to defend the Jewish people. What did he say? Ein bikoyach, listen to this amazing thing, I don't have any power except to go to sleep. You hear that? And it says that what he did was he went to sleep and they had to wake him in the morning to tell him that a miraculous plague had killed the enemy. Over 100,000 of them, the Assyrians were destroyed, they went out and they found them all dead. That was his effort. His effort was going to sleep. What does this mean? Understand. Let's try and understand this. And Hashem says, Ani oisechet, I will do it. Understand. First of all, the problem is, what do you mean, I will do it? They never asked for it. What did they ask? David said, I will chase my enemies and destroy them. Erdoif, oivai, vashmidaim, v'loi, oshuvat kaloisem. I will chase my enemies and destroy them, and I will not return till they are destroyed. And Hashem says, I'll do it. Well, he didn't ask him. What's Hashem answering? He didn't ask. He followed. And the same... Before Hashem explained, it means this. What David was saying to Hashem was, Hashem, of course you will do it. Of course I'm asking you to do it. Of course I know you're going to do it. But I'm going to make all the effort. I'm going to show that when a man makes effort, and he does everything that's necessary from the beginning to the end of the action, I'm going to show that the action is nothing, that despite doing the action, we won't have our eyes clouded for a moment, we'll know that it's you. And each king was able to feel, listen carefully, comes Asa, and Asa feels, Hashem, I'm in danger. I'm in too much danger. I don't have the greatness of David. You might think it's the other way around, right? The superficial understanding would think that the one who does less is greater. You might think that, no? King Chizkiah goes to sleep. Why, he's so confident of the miracle, he lies down in bed, and he doesn't make an effort at all, doesn't move, and Hashem wipes out all his enemies from beginning to end. That's an incredible level. No, Chazal say, no, that's the least of them. That's the least. Why? I think the idea should be clear by now. But briefly, for those who might not have it clear, it's like this. When King Asa comes along and he says, Hashem, I'm in danger. If I will chase my enemies, if I and the Jewish people will chase these enemies who are threatening us, and we will chase them and destroy them, we are in terrible danger of thinking that we did it. After all, we're an army, we train, we have our weapons, we prepare ourselves, we make a strategy, we do all the moves that we have to do. And if we chase our enemies and then we destroy them, we're in terrible danger of losing sight of you, Hashem. We might for a moment think that it's because we did it that we were victorious, because we put the effort in. Therefore, I'm going to make a limited effort. You follow? I'll make the effort that I feel I can. I'll make such an effort that I feel is safe. But the final pitch, the final stage of the effort, actually carrying out the plan, the battle, I'm going to leave to you. Not because I don't have the courage to do it, but because I doubt myself, because I'm worried that if I do it, I may end up thinking, and we may end up thinking, that actually there's some power in our hands, and we'll lose sight of you. You hear that? The next king, the even lower generation, Jehoshaphat, he said, Hashem, if I make any move at all, if I chase them even, if I make any military effort, and they destroy it, even if it's miraculous in the end, I'm in danger of thinking, I don't trust myself, I'm in danger of thinking that maybe because I made a clever move, that caused the destruction of the earth, I'm just going to dump it. That's all I'm prepared to do. I'm not prepared to make any effort. All we'll do, we'll go to the base of Mikdash, the Jewish people, we won't lift a hand against our enemies, we'll just call out to you and dump it. That way, when they're destroyed, we'll know you answered our tefillah that it was you who were doing it. And we're in no danger, you follow, of falling into the trap of thinking, Koichi v'oitzim yodi, that's the power of my hand that achieved this result. King Chizkiah was on a level where he said to Hashem, I can't trust myself even to daven. You hear that? Even to daven was too much. And I might think that I did something. Incredible idea. If I go to the Beis HaMikdash and I daven, and I pour out my heart, and we the Jewish people, we will end up thinking that yes, we put out some spiritual vibes into the world. We had a certain power. We did it. We did something. No, we did it this way. You could do it that way. You could do it. We did it this way. We did it. Hashem, I'm in such danger that I lie petrified. All I do is lie asleep. I don't move. I go to sleep. I can't even be accused afterwards of even having been conscious as an effort. Able to pitch into battle with all the training and all the bravery and all the physical effort of going deep into battle himself with his men. And as every action happened in battle, as he himself conducted the battle, and as he himself fought hand to hand in battle, every flicker of a movement, like it says, Shibisi Hashem Negdi Tomit. I've always placed you in front of me. That means, Hashem, you never move away from in front of my eyes. And they say when David was killing people on the battlefield even, he was being makriv korbanos to Hashem. It was like he was serving in the Beis HaMikdash offering sacrifices. There was not an instant in his life that Hashem wasn't completely and utterly in front of him. Therefore, the pathway that he followed, that he chose to teach to the Jewish people, was the pathway of making an effort to show that the effort's nothing. But you have to be incredibly great for that. Because if you're on any lesser level than that, and you make an effort, you're in terrible danger of thinking that the effort's real. Clear? So, these two levels are like this. The man on the greater, the woman on the greater level, makes tremendous effort. He multiplies effort in the world to teach himself that this effort's nothing, and this effort's nothing, and this is nothing. And he does everything in the physical world to show him that this is meaningless, and this is meaningless. He breaks it, and breaks it, and breaks it. But a person on the lower level would love to do that, but he can't risk it. Because as soon as he makes an effort, he's in danger of thinking maybe it's real. So he withholds his hand, and he doesn't make any effort. And it requires Hashem to show him miracles. He needs the miracles. Because he doesn't, yes, he needs the miracles like Chizkiah. He needs Hashem to miraculously do everything for him, so that he won't be in danger of thinking that he did it. And he's on a level great enough to merit the miracles. So in case you think you're on that level, this third level, probably not. Probably not. Maybe, but probably not. Then comes the fourth level. Now, this is where it says most people are. Okay? This is what it says. Ro'iv b'nei Adam. This is where most people are on this level. What's this level? This is a level where people are, where they see nature as real, unfortunately. They don't see behind nature. When nature happens, they see it as real. When they make an effort, whether they make a big effort or a little effort, they see nature as real. There's almost no hope for these people. Right? That's most people. Right? There are some who are unfortunately lower than this. Later. Wait till we get there. But these people are people who see nature as real. And when something happens in the physical world, they think it happens. They think it's real. They lose sight of Hashem behind it. It follows the natural pathway. The natural events happen according to natural laws, and they think it's natural. So they're in danger of losing him on entirely. How can you help such a person? You see, the mystical principle here is that Hashem deals with each person on his level in order to help him see that nature is nothing. You hear that? Hashem takes a person and he deals with him on his level to break his belief in nature. Whatever level you're on, right? If you're on the highest level, Hashem shows you miracles because you're not in any danger. You've been omen b'nisayon, you've seen through nature, he gives you miracles. Person on the next level, he requires you to do actions to break nature all the time, to keep reminding yourself. Person on the next level, the third level, Hashem requires that you don't involve yourself in the physical because it's too dangerous for you. So he shows you miracles. You follow? He must show you miracles to prevent you, because he's kindly. He wants you to reach the level that you can. So he keeps showing you miracles so that you don't have to make an effort, so that you see him clearly. He gives you the best chance, because when a person like that sees a miracle, he says, it's Hashem. But on the fourth level, there's no hope. There's almost no hope. Because people on the fourth level, even if you show them miracles, they look for the natural. People on the fourth level, yes, when they see nature, they see nature. But even when they see miracles, they see. You know what would happen if the Red Sea split today? You know what would happen? You know what would happen? The New York Times would send a seismographic expedition over there to find out exactly what happened over here. That's right. And like a rebel victim, and it says it would be a waste of a good miracle. That's what happens. So that's one of the main reasons, by the way. People often ask the question, why Hashem doesn't show us miracles today? Many people, how many people have said? How many people have said, listen, if Hashem is there and he wants me to know about him, I want to see. Show me just one. I'm not going to be too fussy. Just one. One once, that's all. Let him show me his credentials. He wants me to work for him and believe in him, give my life to him. You know what the truth is? The truth is, first of all, it says you should know there's a mystical principle that Hashem doesn't stoop to that, first of all. You follow? He doesn't stoop to that. Because you want a miracle. You know, they say Rav Yisrael Salanter, he once taught this in the most beautiful way. Once there was a man in Vilna, Salant, wherever it was, he once said to Rav Yisrael, why doesn't Hashem show me miracles? He was a denier, this man. He brought up his family away from the Torah pathway. One of the most killing was already into the Enlightenment. And he was moving away from the Torah pathway. And he said once to Rishol, if Hashem really is there, why doesn't he show me? Let him show me once. If all these miracles are true that he did in the past, let him show me. So once Rishol, he didn't have an answer for him. But once, sometime later, he answered him in the following way, beautiful way to teach a man. He came to him once and he said to him, he started talking to him about his daughter. This man had a daughter who was a famous, I think it was in Vilna, she was a famous dancer in Vilna. Nebuch, that's what he'd sung to this man. Instead of having a girl who was great in Torah, mitzvahs and midas, Beis Yaakov, she was a dancer. He danced for people. So this man was speaking with pride about his daughter. He was at a stage already so far from Torah that he was proud that his daughter, so she achieved greatness in exposing herself in this way, publicly. He was telling Rizal about his daughter being the most famous dancer, the greatest dancer, the best dancer that there was. So Rizal said, call her in, let her dance for me, I want to see, I don't believe you. So the man called his daughter in, and he said to her, he doesn't believe, this rabbi doesn't believe that you're a great dancer. No, dance for him. So the girl turned up her nose and she said, for him? She said, if he wants to watch me dance, then buy a ticket like anybody else. Then he buy a ticket and come to the show. I'm going to dance for him. So the man was very deflated. So after the girl left, Rizal turned and he said, and for any idiot, you want Hashem to dance? For some idiot who demands, I don't know if he used those words, but for some individual who demands that Hashem must dance, you pay the price, you see the show. Beautiful idea. Anyway, be that as it may. So Hashem doesn't do miracles for us, for that and other reasons. He established his credentials already for the Jewish people. But in the level of tonight's discussion, the idea is that if Hashem did miracles, it wouldn't help people on this level. You know, Rav Miller gives an example. What would be, I'll just translate it into local terms. What would happen if all the houses in Gilen Hazel turned bright yellow tomorrow? Let's say you wake up in the morning, you're walking out to davening. As you look up, suddenly in front of your eyes, everything turns bright yellow, luminous yellow, instantaneously in front of your eyes. What would happen? You know what would happen. You'd find people scraping bits of the wall off with a knife and taking it to the local lab, right, to be analysed exactly what exactly is going on over here. Is it a remarkable phenomenon and cosmic rays and who knows what's going on? Is that right? That's exactly what would happen, right? Nobody. In other words, the problem is that when you live in a generation where the be-all, where the whole essence of reality is the workings of nature, so it would be a waste of a miracle. People aren't going to see it even if you show them a miracle. And on the contrary, you make them much worse off if you show them a miracle. Because if you show a person nature and he thinks it's nature, you don't have so much against him. But if you take a person and you show him the miraculous and he denies it, you see what you brought him to. You see what a disservice you've done him. You see what Hashem... If Hashem comes and he taps you on the shoulder and says, here I am, and I want you to be with me, and you start looking for the natural explanation of who it was that tapped you on the shoulder. So then you've broken emunah, you're much worse off than you were before. Is that clear? And therefore he can't do that. He'd love to do that for you. He'd love to dance. But he can't afford to, because you'll be much worse off. You'll be much lower in emunah. You'll take the spiritual world and you'll break it down if he does that for you. So Hashem, you paralyze, as it were. His Ashgacha, you don't allow him to show you miracles. That's what we are, Reb Benel. That's what it says. So how do you help such a person? You have to hear this well now. Now comes the bad news. How does Hashem help such a person? He can't show you miracles, right? Because you're going to be worse off for it. Now what's he going to do? How is he going to let you relate to the physical world? This person can't call on miracles. He doesn't want to. He can't be shown miracles. What's left? What's left in Hashem's armamentarium of Ashgacha, of Hanhaga, of how he relates to this person, to make this person see that the physical world is nothing? Because try as he may, the person's going to see that the physical world is everything. What can he do? Let's say this person goes out to make a living. Yeah? Let's say this person doesn't make much effort to earn a living and he earns a living. Let's say he was lucky. Let's say he makes an effort to earn a living and he's successful. So you'll say, it's because I worked. There's only one way you can treat such a person. This is the frightening part. You let him make a big effort and then you make him fail. You hear that? You let him make plenty of effort with all the right factors and all the right variables, and you let him apply himself in the physical world and make all the right moves that works for everybody else, always, and then you make him crash. How else are you going to break his belief in the natural world? You hear it? And that's why many times, people experience, they try to act in the physical world, and they have everything going for them, and they crash. And they, unfortunately, sometimes have a tendency to turn around and say negative things. On the contrary, that's when a person should wake up. What a fool I was. A person should wake up. A person should relish it. When a person makes an effort and it collapses. So of course the effort's nothing. That's what you're supposed to wake up to. Obviously, it doesn't want you yet. There's some fascinating principles. It says, for example, there's one place in Chazal that says that if a Talmid Chacham, he has a man in yeshiva, he's a sage, he studies in yeshiva, and this man goes out to make a living. He closes the Gemara, and he goes out and makes a living, and Hashem makes him fail. And he fails miserably. He's bright. He's got a Gemara background, a Gemara head. He makes the right moves in business. He does everything. He fails miserably. You know what it says? It's a sign that Hashem loves his Torah. He doesn't want him out. He wants him back in yeshiva. He wants his Torah in the world. So he takes this individual, and he lets him make all the effort, and he makes it all come to nothing. The teacher's man that doesn't want him there. He wants him back. His Torah is precious to him. And that's the kind of way that, unfortunately, most of us, right, in this generation, we have to learn that hard lesson. We have to learn the lesson that the physical world is nothing, that it's all Hashem. And it's the only way to do it. He can't show you miracles. And everything you try, whatever he tries to do, you keep stubbornly saying, well, it's natural. There's only one thing left. A desperate attempt to build you up in the natural, to let you put all your effort into it, until you really think the natural is natural, and then to make it crash. Instead of getting depressed when that happens, a person should thank Hashem for showing him this. Because what would be much worse is if Hashem let you put effort into the physical and then he let you succeed. Because then you'd be finished. If he really loves you, he'll make you fail. Are we together? If he really loves you, he'll make you fail. Because if he lets you work hard and make all the right moves and then you succeed, what are you going to say? You're not going to look for the miracle. You won't look for the miracle when he shows you miracles. So what are you going to say? Sure, I succeed. I work hard. I'm up early in the morning. I work till late at night. And you're finished. And that, unfortunately, brings us to the fifth level, the last level. Fortunately, most people aren't on this level, but we need people on this level. And halavai, that shouldn't be any of us. This is a terrifying, terrifying idea. Frightening, awesome, terrifying, horrific idea. There are some people who make an effort and succeed. Right? Or something. Make an effort and they do succeed. Now, before you start judging people to do this, you have to know. Sometimes a person's on a level where he makes an effort and succeeds, and who knows that it's Hashem. And he gives trumas, he gives maaser, he gives away to tzedakah, he thanks Hashem for it, he thinks it's because he doesn't think it's because of the maaser he sends. So you have to be careful before you judge an individual. But I'm not saying everybody who does well and succeeds fits into this by no means. But there are people who do well and succeed, and they are on a level of complete impurity. People, what's called Chayolos HaSotan, there's a people on the terrible, terrible level. What it means is this. Amazing, amazing idea. There are some people who are so bad in spiritual terms, they're so far away from the spiritual source that you just can't help them. There's just no way you can help them. Yes, miracles, not miracles, they're going to say everything's natural. They make an effort and fail, they'll say, they're unlucky. They didn't make enough effort, they didn't make the right effort. You follow? They make an effort and succeed, they also fail, they'll say it's because they made an effort. There's no way to help that. What are you going to do? Show a miracle that doesn't help him. Withhold miracles that won't help him either. Let him work and fail and he's still not going to see. So what does Hashem do with such individuals? He lets them work and he lets them succeed. You know why? Because then you can't help. It's no good making them fail. It's no good making... There are other reasons for this also, by the way, but one, unfortunately, one dimension is this. It's no good making them fail. So why does he let them succeed? Because he needs them to be an ordeal for you. He needs them to be the example of somebody who works hard and makes it, so that you can be tested into thinking, well, gee, maybe if you work, it pays off. They are the decoys of reality. They are the impure version, the impure vision of the way the world shouldn't be, to trap you into making mistakes. That's what they are. They're the bait of the world. They're the people who live royally, and they make a lot of effort, and they work very hard, and they do all the right moves, and they're very successful. So that a person who's not on that level can be tempted to say, maybe it's not Hashem. Maybe if you make an effort, you succeed. Maybe I shouldn't be into all this religious stuff about davening and trusting Hashem and Emunah. Maybe I should get out there and work harder, make the right moves, and believe in my own power. After all, Mr. So-and-so, over there, who's making an effort, and he's succeeding, surely that's why he's succeeding. If there weren't anybody like that, you'd never have such an ordeal. Isn't that right? If everybody who ever worked hard failed, who'd work hard? You wouldn't have any ordeal anymore. If everybody who worked in business from 8 o'clock in the morning till 6 at night and worked hard and worked his fingers to the bone always crashed, right? Always, because Hashem dealt with everybody like that, who would be silly enough to go and work hard anymore? Who'd have an ordeal? You follow? There have to be people who make an effort and succeed, so you can be trapped into thinking. And that's the kind of person you don't want to be. The last thing on earth you want to be is somebody who works hard and thinks that it's because of his work that he's successful, and the only reason Hashem is using you in the world is because he just can't help you. Try as he may, he can't fix you up. So he lets you succeed, which makes you worse than you were before, but it doesn't help anyway because there's nothing he could have done to trap your neighbor into having an ordeal that he at least hopefully can grow through that ordeal. And that's what you are. The bait, yeah, the dead worm on the hook of reality. But that's what's called, that's what it is. That's the basic overview of one thin dimension of this tension between when a person does make an effort, when he doesn't make an effort, what effort making does mean in the world, what it means to some people, what it should mean. And if a person will go over this idea and keep it constantly in front of his eyes and remember on which level most people are and where a person constantly fits, Chas v'Shalom, never to fall into that lower level where nothing can help you, but to be sensitive to what happens and to read the messages correctly. And when something happens that does teach and does educate a person this way, to get the message and to understand it, Mitzvah Hashem, we should all be zeichet to that level of Emunah.